Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
It was the best of times. It was the worst.
She was the people's princess.
We shall fight on the beaches.
Away, man. These are the things that made England.
We shall fight on the landing ground.
These are the things that made England.
I have the body, but of a weak and evil woman.
These are the things that made England.
And a king of England, too.
These are the things that made England.
Cry God for Harry!
And these are the things that made England.
England! And St. George!
These are the things that made England.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Things That Made England. It's a long time since we've been here, but we are back with a new episode. So the idea of the show, just in case you were not aware, is to decide on what things made England as she is, the country that, despite it all, we feel lucky to be part of. So, as you know, one of us, every time we do this, which is not every week now, pitches an idea to the other to be designated as one of the things that made England distinctive, or, on the other hand, not. And before anyone says we never don't put anything in the cabinet, well, we do. Well, we did it once. We didn't put the sun in. Right, there. So there we go. Anyway, so, and then there's Rule 33B, which dictates that it doesn't have to be unique to England. It just has to be something that the English find very important and has formed the way they are. Okay. Is that alles klar and alles in Ordnung? I am joined today by Luke Baxter. Hello, Luke.
Hello, David, and Happy New Year, and Happy New Year to all of our listeners.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Happy New Year. Luke, is Luke a diminutive a bull?
No.
No. Nobody calls you Lulu.
Nobody who's still alive, no.
or Kay?
Yeah, no, Luke. Do people call you Dave? I don't see you as a Dave.
Yeah, meet Dave, swims like a fish. Dave or Chuff is another one.
Chuff.
Chuff or Bushhead.
Right,
or Bugs, actually, interesting enough.
As in
I
bunny?
I like Bugs. As in, no, there's a complicated story to do with a Welsh rabbit. Okay. It's quite dull, actually.
Right.
Anyway, I'm sorry, I said, do you know Lucky Luke? Lucky Luke.
Bien sûr. No. Oui.
Bien sûr. Uh-huh. Yeah. Extra.
Wait. That was my Belgian childhood. That's why I'm into Asterix as well.
Oh, is that right? Is he Belgian?
Well, Belgian friend. Yeah. Maybe.
Anywho, so the topic today is beer, Luke. And I would like to say, I think I can see already from the outset a couple of major problems with this topic. Would you like me to tell you what they are, or would you like to volunteer them?
No, I'd much rather you told me exactly what they are.
Okay. So, number one, the inconvenient fact is that beer has been brewed by countries all over the world since time immemorial, as Ronnie Barker would have said.
That's very true.
So, I mean, come on. Something that made England? I don't think so. Well, that's an argument we've got at hand.
Mentioned in Gilgamesh.
Yes, indeed. Right, yep. From the beginning of civilization, isn't it?
Very much so, yeah.
When was that then? Was that what, 1978, down the Bull and Bush? Gilgamesh, was he?
I think it was predates that a little.
Morning, Gilgamesh. How are you doing? You normal? That sort of thing.
What's that? It was a Babylonian... Well, it's the first written story, isn't it?
Right. Okay. You're much more erudite than I am. Okay. Very good. So number two, is there anything uniquely English about beer in the British context? Although I can apply Rule 33B as dispensation on that one.
Very
but
much.
It's a thing that made England because it's important to the English. So, I suspect there are a few truths that are generally and universally believed about the English and beer, Luke. I've got two of them, and if you'd like to add any,
yes.
I'd be delighted for you to hear it. Number one, the English drink warm, flat beer, and it's gross.
Yeah, okay? I've got that in my notes.
I think...
Discuss the warm beer thing of stereotype law. I'd call it.
Yeah, indeed. Stereotype law.
Of stereotype law. I was being a bit...
L-O-R-E rather than L-A-W.
Yes.
Gotcha, yeah.
Sorry.
Although I think that's a colonial thing, really. You know? It's those damn colonials fighting back. Although, do the Europeans think that?
Yes. The Spanish are totally mock us constantly about our love of warm beer.
Really? What about the Belgians?
What, do they mock us or do they have warm beer?
I thought they did have warm beer.
No. I think it's mostly us. Okay. We don't have warm beer.
We don't have warm beer anyway. Yes, you don't have proper beer served warm. Anyway, so that's number one, that we drink warm, flat beer and it's gross. Number two, the English are complete pissheads and they are binge drinkers and everyone here drinks too much and gets pissed on Brigade on a Friday night and vomits on down the gutters.
No. How could you possibly say that?
Is that right? Are you saying that's not true? Or are you saying people don't say that?
Yeah, no, I think it's people say it and it is true.
Ah, right. I don't think it is.
That wasn't sound effects, listeners. That was me opening a real beer.
I thought that was very good. Very effective sound effects, actually. Putting the can on a pint of beer. I've got some beer with me, but I don't. Haven't got an opener.
I've got one. I could lend you mine, but...
That'd be great. If you could put it down online, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Anyway, before we noodle too much, let me give you a couple of facts. Tell on the number two one about the English piss heads and drink too much. Tell me, in Europe, the country that has the lowest death rate due to alcohol.
Is it England?
There's a group of them.
Right.
But one of them is England.
Right.
Okay. Can you tell me which areas of Europe have the highest death rate?
Due to alcohol? Would it be
due to alcohol?
Right. I'd have gone sort of Poland and Eastern Europe.
Yeah, it's quite a lot in your Eastern Europe, to be fair. But actual fact, it's... I think one is in Slovenia.
Yeah.
The other one is in Bremen, apparently, is number two.
Bremen?
And
Germany?
Poland is number two. Yeah. No, the Bremen just off the Fulham Road. Yes, of course, Germany.
Oh, sorry. Entschuldigung. Yeah.
Sorry, is that anything funny, Luke? Don't be upset with me. I love you, really. It was just, you know... Bremen, Germany. No.
Well, it could have been Holland, actually. That's Breda. Actually, weirdly, right. my beer owner is from Breda in Holland. I don't know why.
Is it? Well, there you go. It's not from Bremen then. Anyway,
move
on.
We digress.
Actually, I do then have a chart mapping crime rates with alcohol rates. Which two areas do you think in the England and Wales have the worst crime rates in 1902.
1902?
Yeah, 1902.
Right. Inner city London and Birmingham. Peaky Blinders.
One more? One more guess, because there are three of them, actually.
Loughborough.
People don't drink in Loughborough. People just wear halos all the time in Loughborough. That's all we do. No, the answer is London. Yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Birmingham is a model of sobriety. The northeast, Newcastle.
Yeah, I wasn't
going
to say Liverpool.
But then you didn't want to adhere to social stereotypes.
Yeah.
The northeast, not the northwest, and South Wales.
Right.
And they absolutely match the highest crime rates.
With the highest alcohol consumption rates.
Indeed. This is, of course, 1902. So obviously that's not the case now. Okay. It would be entirely different. I'd like to apologise to the people of South Wales for any suggestion that this is anything other than historical information.
Would it be the case that that's still the true, though, that the alcohol consumption and crime rates, there is a correlation between the two?
Oh, I'd imagine that
or drugs
probably is true, yes. Mm. But I do not know so. No. So essentially, the thing is, Luke, that actually the English don't drink that much alcohol. So we are, I think, somewhere around 33 in Europe. Germany are far higher than us. France are way higher. The Netherlands and so on. Actually, we don't drink that much.
Pissheads. Don't we drink more to excess somehow? I mean, the French drink more regularly and we get drunk on a Friday night.
That is a universal truth that people talk about. Do you have any evidence?
Not to hand.
Other than
watching
the telly about Leeds on a Friday night?
Yeah, not to hand.
No. I mean,
my knowledge of the Spanish, I would say the Spanish get less drunk, but, drink.
Right.
They will always have.
Spain was one of the areas of the world in that survey, which was down at the same sort of level of us in terms of death rate according to alcohol, as was Italy. France is higher. Yes. So my point is, I think we are maligned. Clearly, is binge drinking. I spent an afternoon in a German pub in Leipzig once, and it was a bloodbath. Luke, a bloodbath. Okay. It was also a noisy bloodbath, and there was a lot of singing, which was great, actually, I have to say.
And slapping and thighs and...
A lot of thigh slapping, although this is Leipzig, not Southern Germany. But yes, I mean, there's certainly a great tradition of we're in a beer hall, we're all going to have fun, and it's great. And I think one of the things I've learned is that German beer is not gassy foreign lager. It's fantastic beer, which just happened to be a lager style.
Yeah.
So I've been converted very much.
And we also found out that you know a lot more about German geography than I do, I think.
Absolutely bugger all about German geography. I did have a map in front of me, so
Right, that helps.
So those are a couple of myths that I'd just like to puncture. I'm going to give you a quick history of beer in England. I hope that's all right. Am I going to bore you?
No, not at all.
Are you sure?
Very much so.
Anyway, you've got your pint, so,
I'm
whatever.
Fine. getting sloshed.
Okay, beer. Ale, real ale, Luke, is not what you think it is. Actually, you've heard all this before. I did it at the conference, but try and look interested.
Yeah.
So real ale is not what you think it is. Ale, until the 16th century, was more like porridge or soup. So there's a lovely little tale from the Viking world, where the ale maidens in Valhalla who distribute their ale to the heroes carry around with them a little strainer because there's so much muck in the ale that they have to strain it out before they can even contemplate drinking it. So it's very, very different. And it's also, there's not very much hop in it. There might be a little bit for taste reasons, but it's not beer in the way that we recognize it now. Ale houses were everywhere. Everyone drank all the time. So women, children, as well as men.
Yeah.
You worked and drank all the time. The old myth about it being because you had to kill all the bugs in the water is, largely speaking, a myth. I mean, if you're in the middle of a town, it might be true. But generally speaking, people lived near running water and there wasn't enormous amounts of runoff from illegal sewage dumps, as there is all the time. You lived near water supply. So that's just a myth, really.
Right.
They drank beer because it was an extremely effective way of getting both calories and liquid.
Yeah.
No easier way.
It's amazing how much they drank, though, wasn't it?
It is amazing how much they drank. And actually, one of the things that surprised me a lot was that small beer, which of course is, 2% proof or something like that, wasn't that common until, later in the Middle Ages, that it wasn't the case that everybody drank this incredibly weak thing. Or it wasn't, according to Paul Jennings, anyway, actually beer was often 8%. So
yes, and didn't they mix it? There was something called table beer that they mixed for the children and the women. And they mixed it in with something else. Water. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that sounds sensible. Yes.
Yeah.
Kind of what I'm thinking of as small beer. But according to Paul Jennings, actually, that doesn't appear until beer appears.
Yeah. Right.
Which is 16th century. But you've got to doubt that, I must admit, because presumably everybody would be wandering around, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, having said that,
you drink those 8 pints a day throughout the whole day. So you're not, it's not like Leeds on a Friday night.
No. Yes, I mean, because I listened to something and they were saying that, the daily allowance for a monk was 16 pints of beer, 2 gallons.
Yes.
And Queen
absolutely
Elizabeth
gobsmacking, isn't it?
Had 2 pints for
God
breakfast.
God knows what would happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, they'd have it all day long.
Yeah.
In whatever they were doing.
Mm.
So there's a bit of a dispute about when lager was invented. So a Bavarian monk discovered it in the 9th century, apparently, though it's much more common after the 15th century or from the 15th century when it begins to take over in Europe in particular. Doesn't come here till much later. But do you know the difference between lager and ale in terms of the brewing process? Why is lager lager?
I don't know. Lager, lager, lager. Do you know that song? No, I don't know. Why is lager lager?
So you get two types of fermentation process.
Mm-hmm.
Lager is a bottom fermenting beer where the, I'm going to say bottom 3 times and you're not going to giggle, okay?
I won't.
Bottom, bottom. And I say again,
bottom. One must.
So, it's a beer that ferments in your bottom. No, it's a beer that ferments at the bottom of the cask.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and that's good because although it works at a lower temperature and therefore takes a lot longer, that's good because it's less susceptible to the other type, which is ale, which is top fermenting. Ferments on top of the cask and therefore more likely to get bugs into it.
Okay.
So the other difference
in the same
in
the same cask you will have lager and ale effectively.
No, completely different process. You're doing it a different way. Your cask is either a top fermenter or a bottom fermenter.
Right.
What happens in the 16th century is the introduction of hops. So old ale went off within 2 or 3 days. When you introduce hops, then it preserves it and it lasts much longer.
Yeah.
So that has a big impact on beer. Actually, people moan about it quite a lot, actually, and it takes a while to take off here, but it takes off in Europe much more quickly and earlier. But the point about that is that ale, old ale, was something that happened domestically. It happened all the time. Ale houses were all over the place because they were just basically somebody's front room. You just went into their house. If they put a stick on the top of it with a bit of greenery on the end, you could go in and have a look at it. You had to, by law, you had to keep the door open. But apart from that, beer, once you can preserve it, it becomes a much more commercial and capital-intensive business. You can set up businesses. You can transport it for long distances. it's capital heavy. And of course, the blokes take over.
Yes.
It's a kind of business now. So that domestic brewing.
It was the alewives, wasn't it, who ran those early sort of taverns.
Exactly, absolutely. And they were incredibly informal and all over the place. Interestingly enough, one of the interesting things I learned for the conference is that brewer and brewster are gendered words. So a brewster is female and a brewer is male. And it's the same for hipster.
And Baxter. Actually,
I'm not sure it's the same for hipster.
Baxter. Baker and
Baxter. There you go.
There you go.
So what's a Baxter?
A female baker.
Is that right?
Scotland.
Huh, yeah. Baker, yeah.
But all of those
By golly. Do you know, that's the great thing about podcasting, isn't it, Luke? It's a learning environment. Oh, we learn together.
Yeah.
And we emerge. Yeah. From each episode, we emerge better than we were before. Stronger.
So much better.
Faster. Yeah.
More elevated. Yes.
Yeah. More elevated. Slightly better looking.
Yeah.
Able to listen to the word bottom without sniggering.
Not so much.
Okay. Right. So it becomes commercialized. And by the 18th century, you've got large-scale regional brewing. So it's still very regional rather than necessarily national, although it's getting more and more national as time goes by. But you get that lovely thing, which we have now lost, or actually we're regaining, but we lost for a while, that, you know, you have Newquay Brown in Newcastle.
Yeah.
You have Everard's in Leicestershire. That kind of really regional thing. That's gone now, or except for microbrewing, which we'll come to. Hook Norton from Hook Norton. It's very, very regional. And you can have a pride in your local ale. So whereas London globalization comes along and now Wedgwood is made in China.
Everything's wrong.
Everything is wrong. The war, well, it's the young of today.
It's so awful.
It's the young.
Yeah.
The youth.
Well,
with their idle ways hanging around doing things in China, it's the youth.
Have I shown you my beers that I've got? No, I shouldn't interrupt you.
Leave them till later. We'll come to that. You're going to be rubbish, aren't you?
Yeah.
I know you're going to be rubbish. Yep.
I'm the voice of the youth.
Anyway, finishing the story. 19th century, then, you get the invention of IPA. Do you know what IPA is? I suspect you do.
I do. Indian Pale Ale.
Exactly. And why, possibly mythically, is it called India Pale Ale?
Because they used to take it to India.
Uh-huh. Absolutely right.
And it was an ale.
Indeed. And it's very hoppy because that keeps it.
Because it helps it travel.
For the long journey.
Yeah.
So that's an introduction in the 19th century. Then in the 20th century, a man whose soul is burning in hell happens. And it comes from Canada. And I found this the worst bit of the story because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, everything that is good, truthful, and honest comes from Canada.
A boot?
Doesn't it? I mean, you know, nobody has ever done anything nasty or had a cross word in Canada.
Mm.
Isn't that true?
Their prime minister blacked up quite frequently.
He did, but it was quite a long time ago.
And then, you know, we have got, well, no, we'll go there.
You know, we've learned that that's not a good idea, but, you know.
Yes.
Back then, didn't they? I'm sure my mother would have blacked up without a moment's thought. Anyway, so Eddie Taylor, a Canadian who comes and absolutely creates Carling and nationalizes and commercializes and globalizes, starts that process in the UK. And you get the process where we get to the 70s, where you've got the big six brewers. They've all bought up the little local guys. They're creating beer, which is mass produced, cheap, where they're cutting costs and cutting corners. They're putting it in kegs, because kegs, you take all the brewing elements out of it. So you make it absolutely standard, a bit like lager, actually, and transportable and reliable rather than cask ale, which still has a bit of the sediment in it and therefore is a living, live thing that if you don't keep it very well, still brewing. If you don't keep it well, you know, it'll taste terrible.
Yeah. Yes, that sort of lager, what we used to call disco juice, disco fizz.
Disco juice, yeah. And the stuff you still get now. I mean, when we had a do for one of the daughters, I went down to the supermarket and I bought trays of pee.
Yeah.
And it cost about £1.25 for a cubic ton.
Yeah, and you were ripped off at that.
Probably was. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so...
yeah.
You know, we get to the 70s, and certainly when I was starting to go down the pub, I don't think I knew any better. I'm not sure I do now, to be honest. You know, you got a very mass-produced product kept in a keg, which didn't have a lot of variety.
Yeah.
And then in 1971, who comes and saves us? Luke.
Jimi Hendrix.
No, although one of the people that saved us is called Michael Jackson, interesting enough.
No. Not to the Michael Jackson, I take it. Somebody who started Camera, the campaign for Real Ale.
Well done. Have I told you my very funny headline in the Times?
No. Or maybe you have. But...
it said, camera meetings get bitter. Or something like that. Anyway, it was very good. So having an argument about the young people were saying, hey, camera's getting irrelevant. We need to bring these hipster beers. Otherwise, you'll be just turned into an old man's drinking club.
Yeah.
And a camera, I think, that sounds good. That sounds all right to me. But it sounds fantastic to me.
It's been amazingly successful. I mean, the campaign for Real Ale. You know, I mean, you don't have all that crappy beer lagers anymore. You get nice beers at wherever you go. It's really
you get fantastic beers. But there's more than Camera than that. But certainly that is a massive success that Camera have had, and they're still alive and kicking. The future of Cask Ale is looking a little bit more dicey. Actually, largely, one of the reasons that Cask Ale has done well is also a chap that you're not going to like, a chap called Tim Weatherspoon.
Yeah.
Because although Tim Weatherspoon likes Brexit and is, you know, a mass chain, he makes sure they have Cask Ale kept within all of their outlets. And without Tim Weatherspoon, there might be quite a different story.
Yes, but I hope you don't mind me saying this, but you do look quite like a Camera member, the stereotype with your sort of.
I'm emotionally. I keep on being
sort of jumper.
Also, I'm wearing sandals over my socks.
Good.
I'm not actually, but I should be, and I should be wearing shorts, obviously.
Yes,
with stains.
You really believed in the cause. Yeah.
I do. I keep meaning to sign up to Camera. And I can't believe I'm not. I mean, I was born to be in Camera.
You were born to be. Yeah.
Anyway. So Camera came along and they made a right old fuss and a big campaign saying, look, you are making us drink rubbish and making everybody aware that they were drinking cheap,
piss,
commoditized tripe. And it worked.
Yeah.
People began to take an interest. And although it's still one sector of the market, and you've still got, you know, people drinking carbonated wee. Nonetheless, Cask Ales are back.
Yeah.
So the other guy was a chap called Michael Jackson, who I didn't know about. And he was particularly well known because do you know him?
No, that was my Michael Jackson. You know.
Oh, genius. Genius.
You should probably
be on the stage, mate.
I know. Yeah.
Fantastic. If you've got any other impressions, you know, leave them till we finish.
Well, the listeners will think Michael Jackson's alive now because, you know, you can see me. You can see it's not actually Michael Jackson. But
that is true. But I was looking at my notes, you see. I wasn't looking at you.
Right.
He's alive. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Sorry.
He's alive. He's here. Anyway, so Michael Jackson was a journalist and writer. He did a lot of work where he categorized the different types of beer. Basically, he put, I mean, not exactly science around it, but some sort of categorization around beer. He was an absolute lover of Belgian beer, so much so that they gave him an award, which they never give to people who are not actual brewers. So they love him in Belgium because he made their beers so popular. And he made ales popular in the US, apparently. So he produced something called the World Guide to Beer. And it really took on in America, I am told. People got the message. So there was an American cartoon, apparently, which captioned Michael Jackson in hell, and they depict a drawing of him being offered a can of Miller Lite by the devil.
Yes, because American
getting
beers
the message across
are truly
well. American
awful.
Beer was,
but American
appalling.
Pale ales are lovely. It's one of my favourite things.
Yeah, they have fantastic really ales now. I mean, the story was I went to some conference in America, some publisher's thing, and a bloke took me around Brooklyn. We went around a whole load of really good pubs, bars, and had some superb beer.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's really taken off there as well. You get some, and of course, thing we need to talk about in a sense is microbrewing, which has just gone absolutely bananas. You know, there are now far more microbrewers than more brewers now than there have ever been.
Yeah.
So apparently the story is that also started in the 70s.
Right.
Selby Brewery, and where do you think that was?
Selby.
Correct. Where is Selby?
Germany. No.
Oh, come on.
No.
Yorkshire.
Sorry, of course.
Come on, Selby Coalfield and all that. No? Okay. Right. So Selby Brewery was formed by a chap called Martin Sykes in 1972. And that started the trend of saying, look, small brewer, locally produced material, unique. We're giving you quality here. It might cost a few bob, but we're giving you quality here and something you can feel local pride in. So that fuels growth of variety. It's definitely not just an English phenomenon, anything but anymore. But there are 1,400 breweries across the UK now, 6,000 different ales available on a regular basis, which is a long way from the big six.
Yeah.
Right, little quiz coming up. But before we do that, let's take a short break, Luke, to hear from some interesting sponsors.
Yeah.
If we have any, that is to say.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
So, that's sort of a history. Going back to Michael Jackson for a moment, let me give you a little quiz, okay? I'm going to give you a type of beer, as defined by Jaikol Maxson, and you're going to tell me what is distinctive about it. Okay? Right. You ready?
Yes.
Pen poised? Mm-hmm. Lager. You should know that because we've just talked about it.
What's distinctive about it? It's a bottom brewer. Bottom.
Correct.
Something. Bottom.
Yes.
I remember indeed. The bottoms.
Bottom.
Yeah.
Bottom. And I say again, bottom.
Bottom. Sorry.
So apparently most of today's lager is based on the original Pilsner style, which was pioneered in 1842 in the town of Pilsen.
In
so ale, what is it? I'm sorry?
Ale doesn't have hops in it.
No, I'm talking about modern real ale. Pardon me.
It has lots of hops in it.
It has a lot of hops in it. Like, it is a beer. I should have said, actually, beer took off definitively in England in about the 16th century, basically. And old ale disappeared.
Yes, but ale, originally, what distinguished ale from beer was that beer had hops in it.
Yes, indeed. You're absolutely correct. But now we've taken the word ale and we've made it something different, haven't we? We turned it into something which is any top fermenting, fermented at a higher temperature type beer we now call an ale.
This one's got four types of hop.
Oh, it's a hipster beer then, isn't it?
Well,
that is a hipster beer. Anybody who bawls on about their hops.
I've got more, I've got worse. Yes, it even tells
you
what...
I can imagine you do.
These are dreadful. You will hate them.
Well, I've got... Well, we'll come to the beers that we've got in a moment.
Comparison moment.
Give me some types of ale off the top of your head. If you went to a pub, you might see what types of ale? Not makes, not companies.
So we're talking, just... like, you know, stout. Are we going through all that sort of thing? Stout, American pale ale, Indian pale ale. Bitter.
Yeah, bitter.
Lager. Session IPA.
Yes, there's another one. That. Session. To what denotes a session beer? What defines that?
Is it not that you it's slightly got less alcohol and you can have a real session on it?
Correct.
Oh, it is that.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay, that. It's going to be something you
Absolutely. Really
enjoy. Yeah, good.
Pale ale, we've talked about a bit, but apparently pale ale is lighter. It's quite bitter. Its colour originally came from roasting malt over coke, which gave it a lighter colour, which is I did not know.
Yeah.
Golden ale. Tell me about golden ale. What's the difference in golden ale and lager?
It would be hoppier.
Yes, sort of. Actually, what they did was they said, look, we want a top fermenting ale, which has definitely got an ale taste, but we want to compete with lager. And people like the light, clear taste of lager.
Yeah.
So a chap called John Gilbert set up a brewery called Hops Back. And he created this golden ale, which is an ale rather than a bottom fermenting lager, but it looks a bit like a lager and it's got that lightness of taste.
Yeah.
What is it that makes a mild?
It's not so strong.
I think it can be quite strong, actually. So London Porter, for example, in the 18th century was very strong, actually.
Why is it called a porter?
Because the London Porters loved it.
Oh, well done.
And of course, who nicked it?
Who nicked
London Porter? Yeah.
I don't know. Who nicked London Porter?
Guinness.
Bill Sykes. Oh, I see. Right. Okay.
Alfred Guinness took your London Porter, took it back to Dublin, and they still make it.
Yeah.
So mild doesn't go in a vat. It takes less time to brew, therefore, and it's less bitter because of that. So that's the sort of thing that Michael Jackson did. He said, look, there are these different types of ale and it depends how you make them. And people began to realize there was some craft in it. So we're back to the question then of why, you know, what is individual about English ale? So why don't we, and I think one of the arguments is that makes it difficult is that England has always been an extremely international place, has it not?
It has indeed.
So it has a bit of a reputation for xenophobia, actually, which I think is kind of the weirdest reputation on the planet. Because if you go into any pub, really, many pubs, you will come across beer from Belgium, Germany, Australia, Ireland, India, Holland, Spain, Portugal, America, as well as England, Scotland and Wales.
Yeah.
Incredibly international. And that's happened.
Well, yes, but it might be that we're more welcoming to beers than we are to people. Because we can still be having loads of international beers and still be xenophobic to people coming across a little bit.
I'm not convinced we are, actually, if we're going to have that argument. You go down any street, certainly in London, Leicester, Birmingham, people from all over the place.
Yes.
Anyway, so we're very international. So if we've got all these international beers, you know, surely England has just been taken over by the rest of the world. So shall we share the beers that you picked from your cupboard?
Mm.
You go first. What have you got? Yes.
Well, the one
I go first? Because you're taking it.
The one I've just poured is that one. It's called Pale 4, and it's handcrafted with 4 hops. And they're all American hops, actually. American Amarillo, American Cascade, American Simcoe, and American Citra. So it's an American West
Coast. There's a reason
why
American
IPA
hops are
style.
Very popular. Yeah.
American
and so where's
IPA.
That made?
It's made in Tring. So it's very
Tring,
local.
In Buckinghamshire.
Tring. Yes.
Very good.
Actually, it's right between you and me, actually, wouldn't it be? Geographically speaking.
My first one is, because we've got 3 each, haven't we? First one is Old Speckled Hen.
Oh, there you go. Yep. Yeah, distinctive
And that
English.
Is made, I'm supposed to know that. It's Oxfordshire, isn't it? Old Speckled Hen. Anyway.
It's quite mass-produced, isn't it? You see that?
Yes. I must admit, I didn't have any great ales in my cupboard, which is one of the problems with me. I went down to the pub and I said, is this a keg or a cask ale? And I said, don't know. So I went down another one and I said, is this a keg or a cask? After I tried it, and I guessed with my family, and they said, it's keg.
Well, good.
So I'm buggered if I know the difference between cask ale and keg, but I can get very passionate about it nonetheless.
Yes, even though, yeah.
Just get in the way of me having an opinion.
Yeah.
Okay, what's the next one?
Right, this is my one I've got that is almost designed on so many levels to wind up David and any sort of camera.
It's called Emperor Nero.
So, so it's called El Perro Negro, the Black Dog,
okay,
in Spanish. Awesome. Yeah. Produced in Scotland.
Good.
So it's a Scottish beer.
It was produced in Scotland.
Called El Perro Negro. And along the top is it's zesty Seville orange and gluten-free Pilsner.
Right.
Yes. I thought that you might not know. So Scottish.
Excellent.
Scottish hipster beer, David. You know,
actually, Scott's big on hipster. Scott's really,
My whole
they're really taking on the microbrewery stuff.
Because you promoted Beer 52 occasionally. That's what
Beer 52. Yeah. I mean, I was so excited about it. Oh, this is fantastic. I'm going to love this. And then, I did the stuff because it just sounded great. And I did the promotion. And they were going to send me a box of beer, and they took them ages to arrive. So I had to do the promotion before the beer arrived. So I, talked glowingly about it. The box of beer that came was absolute CRAP.
Don't
crap.
Say that. We could be getting money out of this. Yeah.
It was just utter tripe.
Right.
Full of raspberry beer. Anyway, yes. I've ranted about this, I'm sure, before.
Yes. But
you had a
peach pale ale.
You got a peach one. Just shoot me in the head.
Shoot
me in the head now.
We've been drinking them with my neighbour, and he's quite sort of gallant about taking the really foul ones. Yeah.
Yeah. I must admit, I gave this box of beer to Craig, is his boyfriend. My next one is a bottle-conditioned cask ale, which is St. Austell Brewery, tribute pale ale again. I seem to have lots of pale ales for some reason. So Camera apparently authorise cask-conditioned bottle beer as a real ale.
Good.
Your third one?
My third one. Actually, the one I was, again, this is Scottish, but that was very nice. That was an organic, unfiltered IPA called Spider Monkey.
Right.
From the Black Isle.
Okay.
But these are all your, microbreweries. These are all Scottish microbreweries. Yeah. So the Beer 52.
I have to say, I am...
every month it's from one country.
They're a distribution group, aren't they?
Yes, but every month they do a different country. So this month it was Scotland.
It was Scotland. Very good. Yes, Dave. I have to say I'm slightly conflicted about microbreweries.
Yeah.
Because on the one hand, they produce some absurd beers produced on the basis of market segmentation that we have to warble on in it. It's very marketing driven.
Yeah.
Very hipster driven. We're going to produce all this highfalutin tripe about our beer when a really good beer is produced with local materials, high quality materials, with love and affection, and it's a local beer, in my view, in my humble view. And all the microbrewery stuff is driven by market segmentation and finding a niche and a bit of a USP.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it is lovingly produced beer on small quantities with a massive range of tastes.
Yeah.
So what's not to like?
Yeah.
So although I harbour a deep, bitter resentment, I realise that I am wrong, so to do.
Yeah.
I'd just like to say that publicly. Indeed. Anyway, my third beer is my local beer, which I get every month sent to me, which is the Marlow Brewery.
Oh, yeah.
This particular one is called Rebellion. And it's a dark, deep, red, malty ale, 4.5% proof, and it is a dream and a delight. It's a premium ale with deep reddish hue and packed with complex malt and hop character. A blend of crystal and roasted malts gives a real richness to the beer. Seems to me that
it's definitely
the microbrewers ever talk about malt or just warble on about hops.
Yeah. I don't know. But there's definitely a sort of strand of beers and, that would be in which the sort of, Brexity beers, have sort of like Spitfire or Bombardier. And
Yes.
That's definitely, that's a market segmentation in itself, isn't it?
Yes. Old England, it's old glory.
Yes.
Rebellion. We fought the rich.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're free.
We brought them down.
Yeah.
We are the home of democracy, Luke.
We're free from the shackles of Europe.
Yes. Whoa, go for that. Yes.
Yeah.
Free from the shackles of Europe and all that.
Well, okay, so... A question I've got for you, David. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Have you ever home-brewed?
My dad used to, so I never will.
Right, no. I did, but...
I've never tasted anything more disgusting than my father's homebrew.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there are things you just can't do as well at home.
No, exactly. No, no. And people do.
Have you homebrewed?
No. Yes, I've done lots of that sort of stuff, but not beer.
Well, my dad did wine as well.
Yes.
I mean, it's why my hair looks the way it does, to be honest.
But out of elderberries or something.
I don't know. What you producer? Just too gross.
And did he smell it? Did he smell it? Away.
No, we... No. I wasn't close enough to his bottom.
Right, good.
Anyway, the point about all this internationalism and how international the beer we are and where it all comes from and all the rest of it is that what is it that then that makes England distinctive with its beer? And because I think generally people think beer is something about England. It's quite difficult to pin down what it is. And one of the things I think it might be about is the combination of the beer and the environment in which it is drunk.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that is quite distinctive, certainly about Britain, Paul Jennings argues about England, but I'm not convinced by that, is the pub.
Yeah.
Is it not? So most places in the world have bars.
Yeah.
Do they not? Is that or is that an outrageous statement?
No. Yeah.
Yeah. So that, and we've been through a various different iterations of beer from very simple ale houses, which were basically people's front room. I think Palmerston, I think, licensed beer houses might have been John Peel, very cheap establishments. I think there were about 118,000 pubs at its height around the turn of the 19th century. There were gin palaces, and you can still see that if you go around London. We used to have a fantastic gin palace near us. All that, those mirrors and that glass, and absolutely gorgeous, you know, beautiful. So in the 19th century was really the emergence of what we now think of as a pub with multiple rooms and a bar and a snug and a lounge bar and one for the proles.
Yeah.
And I say about 118,000. We're now losing 30 a week, apparently. So there are about 41,000 pubs left in England, 3,000 in Wales and 3,500 in Scotland.
What's your favourite pub?
Oh, my favourite local is we had one called The Crown at Pishill. People insist on calling it Pishill, but it isn't. It's Pishill. Mm. Sorry. And Russell Brand has just bought it.
Oh.
So we're a bit worried about what he's going to do to it. Lovely pub, very basic, does a bit of food. I had one very happy period of my life, Luke, when we were young and before we had children, because children get in the way of being alive, essentially.
Yes.
And we lived in a little village with a local pub. That local pub did not serve much food. Basically, Daff and Ken, who were the publicans, would serve, you could have a ham cob, you could have a cheese cob, or you could have a ham and cheese cob if you really wanted to push the boat out. And now, of course, that you don't find pubs like that anymore, do you? Everybody has to make food in order to make money, and we could get into why that is. Breakspear's brewery no longer brews beer. They're just property companies that manages their pubs and screws their landlord until they have to give up. And then they sell the property and make a packet. Brewers have turned into the work of the devil.
Yes. The pub in our village has just closed down. It was rubbish for years, but it's always been rubbish. It's finally folded.
It's sad to see it go.
Very sad to see
it go. We've still got some great pubs around as it happens, and I'm sure there'll always be a market for it, but it is smaller than it used to be.
The one pub that were near where I used to live in a village called Ratley near Edge Hill near Banbury.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that overlooks the Battle of Edge Hill. And that apparently dates back to 1098, because it was actually a room, you know, where they were building the church, just the Rose and Crown in Ratley, and it's been an inn since 1775, which is very cool, I think.
Isn't the oldest pub in
Nottingham
in England in Nottingham or something? Yeah. The Road to Jerusalem or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I love all that and. you know, we could go on about the inn and how that differs and the role of the inn in town and urban life. You know, there's a whole history of different types of drinking establishment, but, you know, there isn't time. But I would say that that pub experience is still pretty distinctive, certainly to Ireland and the British Isles. And that is part of the thing about the beer, the fact you can get so much choice, but always there will be a bitter and an ale of some kind, even if it's keg.
Because I think that's what, you know, we find with, you know, Germany is obviously beer, you know, this was the things that made Germany, beer would be a massive thing too. And there are lots of other countries beer and it's distinctive to them, but it's a different... slightly different drink, maybe. Although we obviously drink, or Belgium,
I drink German beer all the time. I mean, I've got loads of German beer.
I think, if it was the things that made Belgium, it'd have one episode, and it would be beer.
Yes,
sorry,
indeed.
That's not fair.
And chips, presumably.
Yes, they're so unfair. And Belgians have got lots of very interesting things.
Yes.
Tintin, Eddie Merckx, a few fictional detectives.
Yes, I mean, in Germany, they have obviously a very distinctive tradition around their beer. And, you know, you think of what's distinct about Germany, one of the things is the type of beer. But you did say something very intelligent once, only once, it's got to be said. But you did once say something very intelligent about humour, that we talk about English humour. And yes, of course, it's true. But actually, it's a very commonplace thing to say because humour is very cultural.
Yeah.
You know, almost by definition, and therefore there's an American humour and there's a German humour, there's an Australian humour, as it were. And it's the same about beer, surely. Mm-hmm. Yes, of course, beer is very English and very distinctively English in England. There is a distinctive type of beer and people associate that with England. But there are the only distinctive thing really about the beer you can get in England is cask ale. I would argue. I don't think you get cask ale anywhere else anymore, do you?
I mean,
maybe you do get it in dribs and drabs and small amounts, but it's not a tradition anywhere else, is it?
Yeah, I don't know what they happen. You know, in Spain, they're really fussy about it all coming out with exactly the right head and a little cañas and cold and, you know, and that's a tradition there and very, very strong. Yeah.
You know why people like cold beer, don't you?
Because it's refreshing?
No, because it means you can't taste it.
No.
So you can drink any old crap, and who cares?
See, I think it makes sense.
Obviously, I'm being slightly aggressive here.
Yeah.
But warm beer or less cold beer, you can taste the flavours.
No, but it's for the situation.
Inarguably true.
You know, and I had my Spanish friends over, and it was really foggy, and we went to the pub, and we sat down, and the beer wasn't too freezing cold, and they were like, oh, now we get it, you know. But in Spain, it's boiling hot, and you know, you'd want something absolutely freezing cold that really super refreshing and really fussy about it. I got a good thing from my St. Cuthbert quote.
Oh, yes,
yeah, for the 6th century. And he's complaining that drunkenness is peculiar to the English, neither the Franks, nor the Gauls, nor the Lombards, nor the Romans, nor the Greeks commit it. So it's quite good. So that stereotype, if it's true, has been around since the 6th century. It's quite good.
I mean, it is true, but of course, they'd have said lots of other things about, you know, other people would have insulted other people in other ways because people are given to insulting other nationalities.
Indeed. St. Cuthbert's quote about the Italians driving was very funny as well.
What, Cuthbert?
Yeah.
Wasn't he a bit before the motor car?
He was. That was the joke. But
okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
Very good joke. I'm sorry. I missed
it's
it.
Hilarious.
Right, straight over my head. Actually, I've got a few other quotes. Actually, here's another English missionary. English missionary, Saint Boniface. Did a lot of traveling in Germany, I think. Who wrote, "In your diocese, the vice of drunkenness is too frequent. This is an evil peculiar to pagans and to our race." That's the English. "Neither the Franks, nor the Gauls, nor the Lombards, nor the Romans, nor the Greeks commit it."
So that's the same quote.
It is the same quote. Well, I've got Boniface and you've got...
Ooh, I've got it down as...
Huh? Well, There you go. Interesting.
I got mine off a podcast, so I'm sure yours is.
So it's probably rubbish. John of Salisbury, the constant habit of drinking has made the English famous among all nations. The 13th century, St. John of Salisbury.
Right.
I learned it. Othello. Quote from Othello. I learned it in England, where indeed they are most potent in potting. Your Dane, your German, your swag-bellied Hollander, drink ho on nothing to your English.
Excellent.
There you go, jolly old Shakespeare.
I looked that up very quickly. It was Boniface writing to Cuthbert.
Ah, by golly. Well, so we scare,
so you were
square
right.
The circle.
Yeah, but they were,
we were both right.
Well, no, both you were right. It was actually Boniface who said it.
Okay, we were both right, but I was a little bit righter. Shall we agree on that?
Let's go with that.
Very British compromise.
Very good, yeah.
So, I mean, my argument is that beer, despite the fact that everybody has it, despite the fact there are lots of different cultures around beer, and Germans and Belgians in particular would lay claim to beer being part of their cultural heritage, there is very much a distinctive beer. And the only thing that confuses the argument a little bit, is that it seems to me that everybody else associates ale with England. You know, do you not think it's with people say England, they will say beer?
Yes.
Or not? Yes. I mean, they might say rubbish beer, but nonetheless, they'll say beer.
I would have said that. Yes, exactly. So, you know, as I say, you get a lot of very fine beer in Spain, but I mean, if you were to think what's the Spanish drink, you'd probably think wine, and the French you'd think wine.
Yes,
and they're indeed. Much more wine culture. Yeah, you know, we've got loads of Italian beers. I mean, Peronis and things like that are massive here.
Yeah,
but I mean, we'd still think of Italy as a wine culture.
Yes, indeed. The other thing about beer is that it's become, I think, in England, also a part of national identity. So it's not just other people thinking about us, it's also part of our identity, isn't it?
Yeah.
So a chap called Sidney Smith in 1823, what two ideas are more inseparable than beer and Britannia? Then Paul Jennings dung out a drinking song. Let us sing our own treasures, old England's good cheer, the profits and pleasures of stout British beer, your wine tippling drams sipping fellows retreat, but your beer drinking Britons can never be beat. Luke, I put it to you.
Yes. Yeah. But also because they sort of promoted beer again, didn't they? When after sort of Hogarth and all the sort of when the gin took over and all the sort of working class were drinking too much gin, and they tried to re-promote beer because they would get less drunk.
Hogarth, of course, was a very nationalist and patriotic bloke, despite, you know, Rake's Progress and all the criticisms and social comment on that. I mean, he was very patriotic indeed, and he associated beer with everything that was right about England and wine and anything else as everything that was wrong about the continent.
That very famous gin picture. I think there's a pair that goes with it. That's sort of the beer one, and everyone's healthy and lovely, and everything's doing really well. It's only the money
gin alley, gin alley, and beer street.
Yes, and the money lender's the only person who looks unhappy because he's doing well out of the gin drinkers.
Yes, and he can't get anything beer street. The money lender's on his uppers.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there anything else to say, Luke? We've been a bit unstructured, I must admit, but I would, despite the fact that beer is everywhere, I think there is a distinctive English style. There are distinctive English beers, Cask Ale in particular, that you don't get elsewhere.
Yep.
And the environment is very specific, at least to the British Isles and Ireland.
Yep.
So I rest my case. It should go dans le cabinet.
For me, I would have to back you up on that. I think very much it would go in the cabinet. And we're doing it again.
Result. We are. We've got to do something, which we don't.
Yeah. They've been teasing us on Facebook.
Quite impressed that the sun remains outside.
Yes.
The cabinet.
I think I didn't check that fact. I just came out with it. Speaking of the Facebook, we should hand over to our Facebook roundup. Here we go.
The comedy series didn't turn out to be quite the multi-episode masterwork that David and I had envisaged, but we enjoyed ourselves putting it together and it did lead to some fun discussions. The second and ultimately final episode in the series was about Blackadder, and we had 53 votes in favour of Blackadder going into the cabinet, 8 votes, including David himself, for no, boobs to that, and 6 people voted for wibble. Interestingly, it was my passing reference to Pink Floyd that caused most comments. Luckily, our own dear Eric, guest presenter of this very episode, is made of strong stuff. Otherwise, he might have taken offence at me dissing the album that he named his daughter Piper after. It's just Piper, by the way. I don't think even Eric would saddle her with the full title of Piper at the Gates of Dawn. That would be quite a mouthful when calling her in for her supper. Do they say supper? The title, incidentally, was taken from something that maybe we should explore one day, The Wind in the Willows. We were keen to get discussion going about what English humour was and whether there was such a thing at all, and the baton was picked up by, amongst others, Stephen, who gave us not only the proper rendition of my sister's interrupting cow joke, but also a potted history of where It Ain't Half Hot Mum sits in David Croft's World War II trilogy. Come to the Facebook page for details. It has been a while since our last podcast episode, but the Facebook page continues to be quite lively, with plenty of contributions on all kinds of things. But the one that caused the biggest flurry of responses was David's post about the etymology of the word Marmite. But it wasn't David's surprise at finding out that the jar is shaped like a casserole, and there is a picture of a casserole on the jar, because Marmite means casserole. It was that it turns out that David doesn't like Marmite. Not surprising, really. I mean, he's wrong on many things, but Marmite is, well, like Marmite, and you either love it or you hate it. I think my favourite post is Alison Mary's question about knickers and trousers versus bras, vests and jumpers. Again, do come to the Facebook page to find out what that's all about. We have had lots of requests for episodes on a wide variety of subjects, but even if they never get made, they can trigger an interesting discussion on Facebook.
Gosh, wasn't that great? Whoever did that, thank you very much.
Well, that was great. Thank you.
Okay, very good. So we've concluded the combination of pub plus ale is an important aspect of being English, even if you happen to spend your life drinking Chardonnay in a wine bar, yeah?
Yeah. So the Things That Made England has a Patreon page, which is www.patreon.com/TTME. We've got 3 tiers, but basically we would really just be very grateful if anyone signs up. And we've got fantastic people like Marilyn Little, Eric Trometer, Michelle Gersich, Kurt Christian, Rowena Card, Steve Doc Pinko Cloutier, Rochelle Booth, and we would like to welcome aboard Glassy Witch as our newest Patreon supporter. We have way up, yep. As well as Guy Smith, Catherine Foe, Rob, and Joseph Smith. Smits. Thank you very much.
They're all very grateful indeed. It's lovely of everybody to be his patron. Thank you very much. Come and join them.
Yes.
So, are we done? Thank you very much for listening, everybody.
Thank you very much.
I hope we have come to the right conclusion. But come and argue with us on the Facebook site, obviously The Things That Made England, and tell us just how wrong I am, and indeed, or how wrong Luke is, or we both are, in fact. Thank you for listening, and goodbye from me, and goodbye from...
me, and thank you very much, David. That was wonderful.
Very good. It's very good indeed. All right, bye, everyone.
Cheers.
God for Harry!
And these are the things that made England...
And St. George!
These are the things that made England.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.